Lenora was born on the 16th of November, 1960. I could never forget that birth date because it's the same date that David Livingstone discovered Victoria Falls. She passed into eternity on 9th of November, the date that the Berlin Wall fell back in 1989, the same year we got married. Lenora Hammond has fought her final battle with pain. Our family crest that we designed. In the early hours of Tuesday, the 9th of November, Lenora fought a final battle with pain and she entered eternity. It's been a long and a difficult battle with cancer, 11 years, but she fought it bravely. These paddles have gone a long ways. In July 2010, Lenora's first bout with cancer, I asked her, what does she want? And she looked at me intensely and she said, I want to live long enough to see my grandchildren. Which at that point was not possible because none of our children were married. Lenora, the youngest daughter of Bill and Harriet Batten, was born at dawn, hence her second name, on the 16th of November 1960 in Eastbourne, Sussex, England. That may surprise some people to know she was born in England. She is named after Bill Batten's mother, Lenora, who was the youngest daughter of her mother, whose name was also Lenora. Lenora's grandmother died of cancer, the same kind of cancer, in her 40s. If I remember right, she was 42. So born in England to American missionary parents from Georgia and Tennessee, raised in Austria, as you can see with the dirndls, and the eldest there is Debbie, who's with us today, just flew in from Austria today. And this is Debbie's wedding in Salzburg, the Sound of Music City. Reverend Bill Batten energetically ministered throughout Eastern Europe behind the Iron Curtain. He devoted 67 years of his life to missions, most of that to the, beyond the Iron Curtain. This is the Rosenhof, the mission headquarters of pioneers which Bill Batten founded in Austria. Of course, it didn't always look like this. Many times it was under snow. Lenora had the joy of having many missionary legends visiting her home and staying in her home and around the dining room table. And this includes Brother Andrew of God Smuggler. When you read in God Smuggler of a phone call with another brother and saying, I'll race you to Vinslow Square, 1968, the Russians were invading Czechoslovakia, and two men raced into Czechoslovakia as hundreds of thousands were fleeing out for leftist Bill Batten and Brother Andrew. And they were shoulder to shoulder handing out Bibles to the Russians in Russian as they were invading Prague in 1968. Richard and Sabina Vombrandt of Tortured for Christ from Romania were also very good close friends of the Batten family. George Verver of Operation Mobilization. In fact, when I first met George Verver, he is the guest speaker at Stellenbosch at the Studentenkerk during a mission week, ascending vehicle there, and the whole church was packed, there was standing room only. As he was leaving amongst the crowds, I said to him as he passed by, I'm Bill Batten's son-in-law. He turned around and he said, Bill Batten's the reason there is an Operation Mobilization. He immediately stopped and started to regale people with stories of Bill Batten, who would go into pubs in England and ask them to turn off the jukebox, stand on the bar and preach the gospel to the people, never more than 5 minutes, and challenge them if they want to hear more, come see him outside. He'd made arrangements with the bar owner in the pub. He would take no longer than 5 minutes. He was never longer than 5 minutes. Then they'd come outside and he'd always have people to bring to the Lord. The trouble was many of the churches didn't want them. Many people came to him afterwards and said, Mr. Batten, you're always welcome here, but please don't bring those friends of yours with you. We don't want those kind of people here. You can imagine the problems that caused. But anyway, George Verver launched Operation Mobilization from England, and I was at a mission conference some years ago when Mike Evans was the guest speaker. And when Mike Evans met Bill Batten, he immediately said to the whole minister's conference, this is a very dangerous man. He invited me to England for a few weeks, and I ended up spending the last 40-something years in missions. And Mike Evans became principal of Geneva Bible Institute. Francis Grimm, under whom I was mentored in Hospital Christian Fellowship, he was also a guest around the Batten's table at the Rosenhof in Salzburg, or Großgemeinde, I should say. Lenora loved traveling with her father in ministry behind the Iron Curtain. And had many friends in Romania, where Lenora chose to be baptized. Lenora's just, her dad's third in from the left, and Lenora's third in from the left as well there. This is the baptismal class of one event in Romania. Nobody under 18 was allowed to be baptized under the communist regime of Ceausescu at that time. Lenora said she wanted to be baptized where baptism meant something. Actually, where it meant a lot. Actually, life and death. When Lenora was baptized, there was one lady who, when she gave a testimony, people started to weep. And when it was explained, they understood why. She said, five male members of my family are Communist Party members. My father, my husband, my brother, two uncles. And they're all Communist Party members, and they've all threatened me not to get baptized. And she said, this morning my husband came and put a knife to my throat and said, if you get baptized today, I'm going to kill you. She testified this, and she went ahead and was baptized. Paul Negrete, who here is baptizing Laura, went back with the young person to her home and spoke with the husband, who was shattered because he knew that she knew that he meant it. They were going to lose their home and everything if she got baptized. Led her husband to the Lord. They lost their home. He lost his job, lost his place in the party. They were kicked out. They had to live in somebody's overcrowded apartment. But that's the kind of cost some people paid for being baptized in Eastern Europe during the Cold War. Lenora loved skiing. In fact, her parents said that when she was about 5 years old, they put skis and they pushed out the front door and she skied down the road to kindergarten in Gruskemein. And every village in Austria had its own dialect, and Lenora was the one person in the family who spoke that local dialect in addition to Hochdeutsch, or proper German, high German. Lenora was as fluent in German as she was in English, and she also learned French at school to such an extent that when we visited Paris, Calvin wouldn't remember this, but Calvin was just a few months old at the time, the French people were stunned. They said, she speaks French without a trace of an accent. And I didn't know Lenora could speak French. She's full of surprises. This is what the Rosenhof would look like during winter. And Bill Bethman said he loved Austria in the summer, the winter, the autumn, and the spring. And they all were special. Skiing was a sport that Lenora was born for. Skiing was a school sport, and they would sometimes spend days doing skiing as part of their schooling. I mean, imagine that. And she was soon separated from the rest and given special coaching to improve her skills as part of the advanced skiing group. And so her father liked to say Lenora was being groomed for the Olympics, which he would always say at the end, Daddy! Did not like him bragging about it like that. Lenora said the biggest sacrifice for her moving to Africa was giving up skiing. She has determined that all her children would learn an alpine sport, and the only alpine sport possible in Cape Town was ice skating. And so ice skating became part of our homeschooling curriculum, and all of our children managed, but Daniela excelled to such an extent that she earned national colors and represents South Africa overseas and synchronized ice skating in France and Italy and the United States of America. In fact, she was in Boston just a week or two before the Boston bombing in 2013. Team South Africa. And Daniela would be the second from the right. And I don't know how she does that. She doesn't get her flexibility from me, that's for sure. Daniela now coaches ice skating in her spare time. Before I met Lenora, she had completed a Bachelor of Science in Education with an emphasis in special education in physical education. She studied at Northern Arizona University, which just happened to have some of the finest ski slopes nearby. As the dad said, she must have really sweated seeking the Lord's will on this one. Northern Arizona University at Flagstaff is at an elevation of 7,200 feet. And Bill Bethman commented to his daughter, I trust that you will not allow your studies to interfere with your skiing. And she won contests in women's freestyle downhill competitions, and she worked as a ski instructor during winter. After graduating from NAU, Lenora studied at Cape and Ray Bible College in England, up in the Lake District, Northern England. This part of Major Ian Thomas's torchbearers. And after graduating from Bible College, she worked on staff at Taunhof, Torchbearers Bible College in Schladming, Austria, which coincidentally was right next to some of the finest ski slopes in Europe. The door to the mission house where she lived was less than 100 feet. Bill Batten paced it out with me and showed me from the gondola lift that within 26 minutes took her to the top of the Alps and provided not only a breathtaking view, but a stunning downhill run down Olympic slopes. In fact, you can get the idea, there's Schladming, and these all the different ski options around there. And isn't it extraordinary how God can lead one to one's studies and service next to fine ski slopes? Well, he didn't do that in Cape Town, but here you can get a bit of an idea of Schladming and some of the amazing ski slopes around there. It's quite amazing because Lenora told me she's scared of heights, but I don't know, how can you ski down 7,000 feet Alps and then say you're scared of heights? So I never really believed that. And this would have been up at Northern Arizona University near Flagstaff when Lenora majored in skiing and also did education. During my first ministry tour to the United States in February 1988, General Ben Parton of the US Air Force pointed out to me that his good friend, Reverend Bill Batten, was visiting South Africa with his beautiful, single, unmarried missionary daughter. And I knew Bill Batten. I'd organized meetings for him and his wife in Cape Town. But when Bill Batten's friend, good friend, General Parton, who's also my first contact in America, first time I stayed in a home, I stayed more than any other over the years, he said, "You two have a lot in common." And like the precision-guided missiles that General Parton designed, he was on target. We did have a lot in common. And I began to be concerned that I'd miss meeting Bill Batten's daughter because she was visiting South Africa right at the same time that I was visiting America for the first time. And I still had a mission to Germany in between, behind Iron Curtain. And by the time I got back to Cape Town, Lenora was, in fact, in Swakopmund. Now, I'd not yet met Lenora. I'd heard enough about her from Bill Batman, from General Parton, another good friend of ours, Elizabeth Arbuthnot in England. So I had a good idea this is the person I was going to marry. But when I phoned her, she is in Swakopmund, and she had just a few more days in the country, and I said, "I've got a missions conference in Kimberley, can you get there?" Well, as it happened, she could, because South African Airways at that time had a See South Africa Airways open ticket for foreigners. You could fly anywhere you liked, as often as you liked, within a given time. And Southwest Africa was part of South Africa at that stage, so she managed to get a flight from Swakopmund through to Kimberley. And I packed my vehicle until about midnight, snapped 2 hours sleep between 12 and 2, and then got up to drive the 1,000 Ks on my own to Kimberley in time to meet a plane at noon. And as Laura reminded me many a time after that, my first words to her were, "Miss Batman, I presume, no time for formalities. We have a missions conference display to set up." And she said, "I should have known right then that's the way it's just going to be the rest of my life." But we headed off, and for the next 12 hours, we talked constantly. So much so that it was midnight before I realized the time, rushed her over to her host, whose lights were all off, not a light in the place. And when we knocked on the door, we knew we were waking people up, and they were not impressed, and we'd really forgotten about time. But that a person you've just met, you could just talk nonstop 12 hours on a whole range, and there's so many things from doctrine, missions, politics, ministry, persecuted church, so many things we had in common. Well, I put in front of her an application form to join Frontline, and under the question, "Why do you want to join Frontline Fellowship?" Lenora wrote, "To fight communism." Well, I was impressed. And that, by the way, was what a passport looked like at that time. And at one point, with all the things required, she said, "Would you like my grandmother's dental records as well?" She apparently thought I had too many requirements in the application process. And she presented me at the same time with a 2.5-page typed list of requirements of what she expects from a mission leader. And in return, she gave me a 0.5-page of what I could expect from her, which also was quite indicative. And they were all backed up with scripture from the books of Timothy. Well, Dora returned to America to sell her car, pay off her remaining college debt, raise support, packed up her belongings, moved to South Africa. And Debbie will have to tell me where this was. Is this Munich?
Frankfurt Airport.
Frankfurt International Airport. So that's Debbie, elder sister, Linda, middle sister, and obviously, like me, the youngest in the family. or the baby, our family, as I say. And that's what a passport looked like a few years later. Interesting how Nora's hairstyle changed every single year. This is back when we did real cut and paste. This was literally cut and paste, where we used scissors and glue to make up the bookmark for sending around for getting prayer supporters for Nora joining our mission. She set up an administrative base in a barn, Descure. It had rain running down the insides of the walls. Lenora bristled at what she called my abrasive manner, and she let me know she thought I was too harsh and impatient, and if some of you think I'm still like that, you wouldn't have wanted to know me back then. She reminded me that she wasn't like the other frontline girls who had all come through the army, and while I did try to take her through some paces, she was a very difficult student. But there's no doubting her love for the Lord, her hatred of communism, her dedication to missions. First picture taken of Lenora and I, obviously in Descure, that's the flag that was right behind my desk, and totally politically incorrect. After a couple of months, my mother asked me, when are you going to marry Lenora? I said, well, I'm trusting Lord with the money to buy an engagement ring. She said, oh, for goodness sakes. Took off her engagement ring and gave it to me and said, here, you can use that. Well, I didn't expect my mother to get her own engagement ring for me, but I now was out of excuses. Nothing could keep me from proposing. And as soon as the Bethans could arrange a time in Cape Town, which was March 1989, Bill Bethan walked her down the aisle at Bible Institute Chapel, Hawke Bay. And these were our wedding pictures at the time. A very homegrown wedding. Lenora even mixed her own confession. And where did we go after this? We headed off behind the Iron Curtain with her parents' Bible smuggling. And as we were driving down the Autobahn, the Bethans were in the car in front, I was in the car behind. And I was going 160, and Laura says, faster, faster, you're losing my dad. Hurry, 160, there's no speed limit on the Autobahn, faster. Okay, 260. And a Porsche comes whizzing past. Stop sitting on the brakes. Go faster. I got up to 320 kilometers an hour, faster than I've ever gone. And I'm still struggling to keep up with Bill Bethel. And Lenora's pushed me to go faster. I mean, that's the limit. I couldn't go over 320. But unbelievable. If you haven't driven on the autobahns with no speed limits in Germany trying to chase Bill Bethel, then you don't know what reviving a prayer life's all about. I've never driven like that. But behind the Iron Curtain, you know, Lenora's a pro at the Bible smuggling, outwitting Marxist border guards. Here you can see the Bethans, there's Bill Bethan in the car. That's the front car. Very normal in Germany to hire cars that are Mercedes-Benz. That's pretty standard entry level. That's not a special car there, apparently. And 3 hours at a border post on average. Lenora's obviously much loved in the churches in Eastern Europe. You can see her mom here and Lenora bottom right. And she had a lot of friends in Eastern Europe. Many missionaries are held back by their wives. Well, I could say Lenora was not like that. She is as dedicated to the mission and to the cause as I am. She'd sometimes push me out the door and say, it's time for another mission, get out. And I've got projects to do around here. Shoo. So Lenora hardly held me back from missions. And there's many people who were surprised about that. But she is always as fervent, although Lenora is a much nicer person than me, the fact that she felt as strongly about the cause and the issues, even though she'd be a lot more polite about it. Being a well-traveled daughter of missionaries, moving between Austria, Africa, and America, Lenora could comfortably move between speaking German with a German accent, Austrian with a Gruskemein accent, English or French, and she could speak to an American with an American accent, she could speak to a South African with a South African accent. So when we'd been married barely 6 months, and I was captured and imprisoned in Marxist Mozambique, a newspaper reporter, very nasty newspaper reporter, Steve Askin, he wrote, Lenora Hammond, who claims to be an American, but speaks with a distinctly South African accent. And of course, well, that was exactly how she was. In 1988, when Lenora moved to South Africa, she attended classes every week for a year to learn Afrikaans. Lenora was always athletic. Although she could not bring her skis to South Africa, she brought a racing bike on the plane literally came through customs with a bike, and the border official asked her, "What's your bike worth?" And she said, "To you or to me?" So it's a good answer. When she was trying to change dollars at the bank, and the person said, "Where do you get these from?" She said, "None of your business." Which is quite right. I mean, who do these people think they are? It's just nice having a person with a free spirit coming along like that. It reminded me of my mother when she first came to England, and she was told to pay more tax for importing some Rhine wines than she had on her. She smashed it in front of customs officials at Dover, saying, "If I can't have them, neither can you." Which there are some strong women in the Hammond and Bathman household. She competed in the Argus cycling tour on a number of occasions. You'll notice the date, 1990. Apparently Andrea ruined all that. After becoming a full-time mother, she didn't continue with her racing cycling tours. But Lenora eagerly participated in the mountain hikes and all kinds of adventures, like when we were hiking with the rhinos, and these are some of the rhinos that were following us on one of the hikes up in the Magaliesberg Mountains. After contracting cancer in 2010, Lenora became an enthusiastic, with a capital E, dragon boat paddler. And of course, like many of the others, as she said, we're all in the same boat, losing her hair to chemo and all of that. But as you can see, Lenora really reached for recovery. I mean, that she had the reach. Pam, who founded the Bells, apparently described Lenora's style with the paddle and how to reach as the ideal. That Lenora really set, she was the stroke, and quickly moved up the front of the boat. And Lenora recruited everyone in her family to join dragon boating in the Table Bay Harbour. And it soon became a regular outing for me as well on Saturday mornings to join Lenora, often as the only male paddler in the boat, in the back of the boat. But I was even included as a member of the team on a number of races. And here you can get a bit of a feel for the fury of it. I mean, just look at that intensity and that passion. And this just shows you the kind of speeds they get up to there. And dragon boating in salt and in salt water in the harbour is very different from in fresh water, such as at Canal Walk. At times, Lenora paddled in other teams too. Apparently, she didn't think the Bells gave her enough workout, so she even was with paddle snappers and Majaji on occasions. And she loved the rebel flag. Her parents, after all, were rebels. When she was asked if she is a Yankee, her response was, "My parents are rebels." And racing for the dragon. Lenora's best friend, Cape Town Joanne, joined the Bells Dragon Boat team, even though she wasn't a cancer survivor, and Joanne soon became a vital part of the dragon boating fraternity, trained to be one of the very few people capable of helming, of steering the boats. And apparently that was right at the beginning. You're going to have to helm. And then you got Lenora into helming too. It was a good deal. I think you can see a little bit of concern here. Having tried myself, let me tell you, it's pretty scary standing up there in the back of the boat as it lurches to just balance yourself and not fall into the water is hard enough. We heard of a helm in Australia who fell off the boat and the rest of the boat didn't notice. And they lost the helm and never found it. Okay. That happens. So I was regularly questioning, why do you not wear life vests? In fact, the helm of all people should wear life vests, surely. And this must be the only dragon boating country in the world where it's not required. But anyway, much of the equipment we needed to make Lenora's last weeks comfortable were provided by Joanne, who's very creative. Some of the team, and you can see Lenora and team, they just loved paddling. And Lenora also loved singing. She enjoyed being part of a quartet and later part of the Cape Town Symphony Orchestra. Lenora had the privilege of singing Haydn's The Creation, and Mendelssohn's Elijah, and Bach's St. Matthew's Passion, and Stainer's The Crucifixion in the Town Hall, carols by candlelight, this is in Constantia, absolutely wonderful, year after year going to these different carols by candlelight, and it was a family event, it was a mission event, we all went and supported. And Handel's Messiah was also some of her favorite performances of any year. She had the opportunity of singing in St. George's Cathedral, and in Strand Street Lutheran Church, which is the oldest Protestant church still operational in the Southern Hemisphere. In fact, Strand Street Lutheran was built like a barn because it was illegal to have any church in the Cape in the 1700s except a Dutch farm church. So the Lutherans were actually an illegal church. So their church was built like a barn. They pretended it was a warehouse, but they fixed the steeple and so on after it became legal at the end of the 1700s. But when they started in the 1770s, it was an illegal church. Quite a history. Lenora's second daughter, Daniela, sang in the Cape Town Youth Choir, representing South Africa overseas as well, singing all over Europe, including in Czech Republic and Germany and in Latvia. In 2009, Lenora donated a kidney to her son Christopher, who went from renal failure to such a peak of fitness that he earned national colors in karate, represented South Africa overseas, bring back bronze medals from international events. So when Lenora was diagnosed with aggressive cancer in 2010, she joined the Bells Dragon Boating and soon was chairman of the Bells. And we hosted, even at this mission here, different events, whether it was committee meetings or Christmas in July and that sort of events. And Lenora took on the hat of all sorts of things, innovated. I think this was the 10th anniversary of the Bells being celebrated, and a whole lot of people brought together who hadn't been together in a while. Lenora was creative like that. She is part of the team during the World Dragon Boat Festival in Malaysia. And it got a nice turn of events. Instead of Lenora sending me off on missions, I was sending her off on more and more overseas events representing the Bells, representing South Africa overseas, such as in Malaysia. And the team won trophies in different places. Sometimes, I think on this occasion, Lenora wasn't allowed to paddle, so she is drumming. Must have been after one of the treatments. And again, just look at that reach. And that's the stretching in the boats. Off on another expedition overseas, the team headed off to Spain. And in Spain, they won the Intercontinental Regatta. And I hope we can find that video at some stage and screen it, because it's amazing what Joanne, as the drummer, filmed with her head camera. Just seeing how the Bells just left the opposition in, we can't say the dust, in the water behind. You can see it literally left them behind and just pulled out ahead. It was such an amazing win, and it was the win, and they won the big trophy at the end. Very impressive. Lenora went to Sarasota. I think she's the only South African there representing South Africa at the American Sarasota Dragon Boating Festival. And you can see they went absolutely berserk with painting everything pink. And how's that for a lot of pink out there, the participants? And this was a major dragon boating event, and she thoroughly enjoyed it. And this is part of teams. She was part of a Canadian team, because that's the thing. If your team's not there, you've got to join in. Other occasion, Lenora joined the Austrian team in Vienna and in Florence and in Venice. Just look at the intensity as she's helming for this team. And some of the Austrian team, I like the way they design things. See how they've got the Austria on one arm and the Lenora on the other, so they personalized their shirts. And that's Austrian stamps. And plus, notice they've all got life vest. I was in the fire brigade. I can't help but think security like that. It just horrifies me to think of people standing up helming in the harbor without a life vest. We have numerous magazine, newspaper articles where Lenora was a spokesperson for the cancer survivors. And these are different published magazine things that we've scanned in. All kinds of magazines, newspapers. The Bells were in the news on a number of occasions, and especially in October, making awareness of fighting cancer. The Tatler, this is the Muse magazine, I think, and here in Table Talk. And she is also interviewed on radio and TV programs, The Breakfast Show, and a bunch of things, ETV and so on. Lenora made ministering to people with cancer a major priority. And she became one of the counselors for Reach for Recovery. How many people do we have here from Reach for Recovery? Thank you. She loved Reach for Recovery. Lenora proved to be a wonderful mother and a talented home educator. You can see our daughters welcoming the first son into the family, Christopher. Luna is a homeschooling mother. This is just some of the workbooks completed. I might say that one time we had some school inspector want to inspect our home, and my first initial reaction was, none their business, no. Then I thought, wait a minute, we've got nothing to hide. Let's bring him in, let's use this witnessing opportunity. So the inspector came in and he saw our maps and library, and he said, you've got a better library than many of our schools. And he looked around and saw the different projects, and yeah, this is incredible. And I asked him, so do you visit the government schools? And he said, no, we're not allowed to inspect the government schools, we only visit private and home schools. I said, well, how would the government schools work? He said, well, 95% of them are dysfunctional, they couldn't qualify for the standards that we're inspecting for the home schools. So isn't that interesting? A home was turned to a school that seemed to specialize in extramural activities. And all kinds. Okay, this is my choice of sports. Both Andrea and Daniela enjoyed practicing on the piano, the very piano that's at the back of the hall now. They were completed Royal Academy of Music exams, and music and guitar lessons and art class at Frank Chabert Art School, and Irish dancing and Girl Guides and Scouts for the boys, and soccer and tennis and ballet, and of course ice skating, all a vital part of education. It made your head spin, the amount of extramural activities. Daniela won awards at Frank Chabert Art Center. I added horse riding and regular visits to museums and battle sites and national parks, and volunteering at animal welfare groups and catcheries and neighborhood cleanups, tree planting, these sort of things, to our homeschooling extramural activities. So there's so many people out there who are deeply concerned about socialization. You can't homeschool, they say. What about socializing? Children who homeschool won't have any friends. And what about sports? Well, those things were not a concern in our family because Lenora made sure of that. Each of our children are a tribute to their mother's dedication and determination and creativity in ensuring that each of our children excelled in their different spheres. And everyone had a different curriculum and all had different majors and interests. But our eldest daughter, Andrea, graduated with honors from Arizona Christian University with a major in communication, emphasis in journalism. Considering people say, but what about tertiary education? You can't get a university education homeschooling. Yes, you can. Lenora did an SAT exam at UCT, and that opened the way for her to go to university. Routinely, homeschoolers outperform those from state schools. Daniela excelled in art school at Varsity College, where she graduated with honors in graphic design and won her national colors in ice skating to represent South Africa overseas for the ice skating team. Christopher achieved a senior black belt in karate, second Dan, and was awarded national colors, represented South Africa overseas in the United States, in Switzerland and Germany, and brought back two bronze medals for South Africa. And he is completing his undergraduate motion picture editing, which, God willing, he'll complete at the end of this year. Calvin excelled in scouts and representing South Africa in 2015 Jamboree in Japan. I might say one of Calvin's first experiences of a school. I was visiting KwaZulu Mission in KwaZulu, and Calvin was probably six, and he was interested in the school, and he said, can he stay for one of the classes? And the teacher said, no problem. And I said, fine, well, I'm going to the recording studio when I come back from Radio Kwezi, I'll pick Calvin up. So when I came back, I rented the classroom. Where's Calvin? He's here for a short while, and he wanted to go to the library. So I went to the library. Have you seen my son? He came here for a few minutes, and then he left. And I thought, clever boy, he's 6 years old. He's worked up two steps to freedom. I walked outside thinking, I wonder where he could be. And next thing I hear him screaming from the back of someone's motorbike, and his motorbike, off-road bike, comes roaring down the road, and he's on the back of someone's snare. Well, later when I asked him, how do you like school? He said, they wanted me to sit in a desk and be quiet. I said, kids get sentenced to that for 12 years. It's inhuman. Like, why would people do that? Horrible. Well, Calvin earned gold in fencing in national tournaments, and he's excelled in water polo and hockey and long distance running, and he represents South Africa and biathlon in Egypt. So much for what about sports when you do homeschooling. Even while studying, Calvin was coaching for years at a number of schools. And all of this is due to the emphasis Lenora gave to physical fitness, sports, and academic excellence. Some people have assumed that our children have excelled in these things because they're dad. Not at all. I'm not the sportsman. My wife's the sports person. She's the one who emphasized these things. I wouldn't have thought of most of these things. I was the history society, debating society, chess society person. The only sports I did was swimming and tennis at school. So Lenora was the one who made our children excel in all these areas. In 2019, Lenora spent the last months of her mother's life caring for her in Arizona. And as she said, she praised God it was 2019, because in 2020 she wouldn't have even been allowed to see her. Yeah. And this lockdown has been cruel. The amount of people have died without their relatives being able to visit them. Lenora has been an example of diligence, a high work ethic, unselfish, sacrificial duty to others. She's always been dedicated to her family, and she's taken her duties very seriously, so much so that we have to regularly tell her to stop worrying. She'd continue to be worrying about the home while she was literally dying. She's concerned about so many things. Leave that to Andrea and Daniela and Kristen, Calvin and I, we'll handle it. And she is so concerned for duties. Who's going to see to this and your medication? And she's been a blessing to so many thousands of people worldwide. In 2005, Lenora suffered from hepatitis, which almost took her life. She was 11 days on an IV drip. She is 5 weeks in a hospital. She is 5 months bedridden. Yet she came out of it fully healthy and made some of the greatest achievements in sport afterwards. Now this 2005 hepatitis was really, really bad. And she was death warmed up. She was yellow as anything. Her eyes are yellow. She is really, when I took her into Vincent Party emergency unit, I said to the emergency unit doctor, who was not a good representative of medical doctors, I said, what's the prognosis? He said, she dies. I said, in the best case scenario? The answer was, she survives. Not the kind of medical doctor you would want for your family, but Lenora's beaten odds many times. And I should say that when she first was diagnosed with cancer, she was told in July 2010, you cannot expect to live more than 5 years. You've got 5 years max. That's in 2010. She was told in January of this year she had maybe 2, possibly 3 months to live. That's in February this year. So Lenora's beaten the odds over and over in many ways. Lenora's always been a good critical proofreader, excellent incisive radio interviewer. Loved having her interviewing me and being part of her interviews, and I've interviewed her too on radio programs. Creative in catering and decorating for events, and warm in counseling and hospitality. She invested her time and energy in many people. Many a night, I went to bed and Lenora was still up past midnight counseling one of our people in the lounge. She poured heart and soul into so many people. It's been very hard for us to see the sudden deterioration in her health over this last year. I mean, just over a year ago, she was hiking, paddling, everything. Since the hip replaced in December, she needed a walker or crutches to get around. Over the last year, she's been in constant pain, frequent nausea. And when we'd ask, how are you feeling? She says, fine. How's the pain? Manageable. On a scale of 1 to 0 to 10, it's a 4. How's a 4 manageable? But that's how she was. There were frequent visits to the hospital. In fact, I said she needed a gold, platinum, diamond, frequent flyer status for Vincent Party Hospital. They should have a parking bay for her with her name on it. She needed blood transfusions, her platelets were low, and a cocktail of medicines. We needed a book to keep track of it. It was just so many medicines. We had a pharmacy at home. To keep all this straight, we had to get an excise book to record when and what was administered on a daily basis through the night. And I'd be at marking there, 2 in the morning, 4 in the morning, 5, 6:30, and so on, what was administered through each day. But Lenora was adamant. She wanted to die at home amongst her family and friends, those who loved her. She didn't want to die in a hospital among strangers. And while none of us are medically trained, aside from first aid, we sought to rise to the challenge of honor wishes becoming caregivers. Really missed my mother, who was a nurse. She rose to a medical challenge. She lived for medical challenges. My mother would say things like, my day is not complete if I haven't seen blood. None of the rest of us inherited that. Lenora's mother's also a nurse. In fact, Lenora's mother and my mother created a new sign at Constantinburg ICU. Constantinburg ICU used to have a sign before Christopher was born saying, only family allowed in ICU. After Christopher was born, they put a new sign up there, no grandparents. Because both grandmothers, being medical people, gave them grief. And, well, they would have helped a lot because they knew what they were doing. We didn't really know what we were doing, but we were getting advice from hospice and being guided. But with frequent power failures, scheduled power failures, I steadfastly refused to use the propaganda term of load shedding. Load shedding is such a stupid euphemism. Load shedding suggests you've got so much, you're giving it away free. It's a power failure. It's a blackout, but it's not load shedding. And honestly, the way our politicians, they speak about shrinkage in companies, which means theft by staff. Why not use the right word, theft? And speak about state capture. Well, it's corruption, it's theft. You know, why can't we just be honest in our terms? But we became adept at sprinting down the hallway at every scheduled power failure to get the generator on so we could run her oxygen machine that she could survive with oxygen flowing through the night. And friends and family members came up with creative ways to make their life more comfortable, less painful. And thank you to Johan for helping out on occasions there. And so many good friends who really were there giving us help and what we needed, and especially Jane. As Nora needed constant 24-hour care, our family members took in turns to watch her and care for her throughout the day. And in my case, I had the night duty. It became difficult for Nora to even drink. At one point, she was commenting on how, thanks to Daniela, straws are banned everywhere, and we can't find any bending straws here because of the war on plastic, which is a good war, we all believe in it. But to find a bendable straw that she could suck, but after a while she couldn't even use a straw, and we need to use syringes to give her water throughout the night. At the end, Lenora was skin and bones, and she'd lost so much weight, it seemed impossible that she was even alive. And she even made a joke early on saying that when she came out of one of these events, she said, this is the first time in my life that I've wanted to gain weight. She organized video calls with her sister Deborah from Austria to communicate with her. Here's when Lenora's parents were here in Cape Town. We could be together for 7 years. The Bafflins were living in the Pinals in Cape Town at our dining room table every week and an active part of our children's life. A highlight of any year for Lenora and her family has been the regular visits of Lenora's elder sister, Deborah from Austria. And it gave Lenora great joy to see how her sister, the teacher, could invest in the education of our children and our grandchildren. In fact, Debbie set up in the upper room, the attic, school desk and so on, and Jeremy had the opportunity of getting school and learning good lessons, which will really help him. And Debbie's enriched a life for all of us in so many ways. So much so that with encouragement of Lenora, Debbie wrote a book. She was called to teach, which we got printed earlier this year, in August. Lenora's last week was very restless, and I would be up constantly through the night seeking to help her, reposition her, administer medicines, give her water with a syringe, hold her hand and read scriptures and pray with her, the last being Psalm 23. Daniela would often have inspiring music like Handel's Messiah playing in the background, because both she and Lenora had sung in their choirs on numerous occasions, and we're sure that these would all have provided inspiring memories in her final days and hours on earth. In the early hours of Tuesday, the 9th of November, between level 4 power failures, Lenora passed into eternity. Sometime after 2 o'clock, I must have fallen asleep because I woke up with a new power failure starting at 4. The moment things shut down, I'm a light sleep, I was up. I leapt to turn on the generator to keep the oxygen support machine running. Then I saw Lenora was very still and she wasn't breathing. In fact, she was cold. She must have passed away sometime between 2 and 4, probably around 3. Every night, we're fearing that for the last week or two. Everyone was so exhausted that I decided to wait till dawn before breaking the news to the household. At 5 o'clock, I heard Hunter coming sprinting down the hallway because he obviously wanted to know why I did not turn on the generator. And so he was the first to hear the news. Now, we all know that Laura was not afraid to die. She often said to people, "I know where I'm going." But it was traumatic for us to see her suffer and to see her in pain and discomfort for months. And the doctor from hospice expressed his amazement that she was still alive, that she'd lost it so long. While nothing fully prepares you for this, and we've already shed many tears, there's still also amongst the grief and the loss, there is a sense of relief too that she's out of pain and free from that cursed cancer. And I should add that cursed chemo as well. It was one of our final acts of love and service to attempt to be a caregivers during a time of lockdown lunacy when innumerable families have not even been allowed to visit their loved ones, their dying relatives in hospital, which she did not want to happen to. It was Laura's greatest desire to see her grandchildren. And she wanted children and grandchildren to be no further than 5 minutes away. Well, she certainly got that wish. All four of our children, all three grandsons and one son-in-law, live at the beautiful home and garden that Laura so lovingly built up and decorated over 3 decades. In 2010, with the first bout with cancer, Laura said, "I want to live long enough to see my grandchildren." Well, that wasn't feasible in 2010, but she was regularly quilting for her children and future grandchildren before they were born. In 2011, we celebrated Andrea's wedding, 17th of December, near Franschhoek. Hunter became the newest member of the family, tolerated because Andrea actually loves him, and we've learned to like him too. In 2015, the birth of our first grandson, Jeremy, and was his Noni really delighted to have. In 2015, Laura was in her second bout with cancer and chemo, and we've actually got a video of her dancing with Jeremy here. Dedication of our first grandchild, Jeremy. And Lenora, as always, organized a special cake for the occasion, quoting from Jeremiah 1 verse 5, "Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were born, I consecrated you." In 2018, we welcomed Joshua, born in Cape Town at Vincent Pallotti Hospital, the same hospital I was born in 1916, when it was called St. Joseph's. This year, 2021, Oliver was born also at Vincent Pallotti. Not that we were allowed into the hospital this year to welcome, but here's Oliver being welcomed into the family. And you can see an extremely delighted grandmother. Lenora just loved to be with her grandchildren. This is Mother's Day this year. We could still get Lenora out. It was difficult, crutches and all that, and finding the closest parking bays. But at the roundhouse, and it was a special Mother's Day because Andrea was expecting their third born, who we now know as Oliver. This is a most delightful occasion at Jeremy's birthday with little baby Oliver. By God's grace, Lenora enjoyed the delightful chances of 3 energetic little grandsons. She's still holding out for a granddaughter, playing in a beautiful garden that she planted and cultivated through her creativity and diligence over 30 years. There wasn't a plant in the garden when we moved there 30 years ago. It was a wasteland. Student digs before us. Everything there has been planted by Lenora. And so Lenora's knitting skills were so well known that during one of his missions behind the Iron Curtain, Bill Bathin was asked by a communist official, "Where is your daughter? The one who knits." Because Lenora's hands are never idle. At every one of our camps and courses and events and many Reformation Society meetings, she'd be knitting, quilting, doing something with her hands. Lenora became an enthusiastic quilter and presented these labors of love to every family member and some close friends. And so you see tonight we've got quite a few of, just a few of Lenora's quilts, just demonstrating some of her creativity and her industry. And we would like anyone who's got a quilt of Lenora's to bring to the funeral service in Franschhoek Dutch Reformed Church on Monday so we can display them there. We've got more space too because this is only a few. Like the woman described in Proverbs 31, Lena was constantly knitting, sewing, quilting, catering, and schnitzels, creating, decorating, and hosting special events, gardening, how she loved to garden, and her little helpers helping her with the gardening, and serving those around her. Improving the world in so many different ways. When new people move in the area, she'd give us freshly baked gifts to take to the neighbor, them to welcome them to the neighborhood. And when people whom we knew were sick, she baked dishes to deliver to the family. So Nora anticipated needs, and she was thoughtful and generous. After mother's death in 2019, Nora took the whole inheritance she had received from her parents, from the sale of their home and anything else, and donated it to the mission for our Livingston House attic conversion, building extension plans and projects. This is what Livingston House looked like when we moved in 20 years ago, November 20 years ago. It doesn't look like this now. And a whole lot of changes have been made. And we are assembled in one of them right now, the Upper Room Bathroom Memorial Hall, which was a vision of ours, which Lenora made possible. And the Upper Room Bathroom Memorial Hall has been a blessing for the last year. It was November last year that we first started meeting in the Upper Room. And every Thursday night for Reformation Society meetings, for home education events, for conferences, seminars, variety contexts, and so much more. All being possible because of Lenora's sacrificial generosity. She put it all into this project. Services, musicians, I don't think our piano has been as well used since it's been moved up here. It's been great. And wonderful opportunities for musicians to be able to bless us with their talents on a number of occasions here. And so all of this is part of vision. That was phase one, the attic conversion. Phase two was adding another four bedrooms, two bathrooms, the Pioneers Network recording studio. Bill Bethman founded Pioneers and Network. And so in honor of his two ministries, we've named this the Pioneers Network Recording Studio, with four different bedrooms and a kitchenette and a workshop for comms IT department. That was phase two. Then it was phase three, completely renovating and expanding the mission's kitchen, which is unrecognizable from what it was before. Everywhere you look in the home, in the garden, at the mission, you see the fruit of Lenora's love and sacrifice and generosity. The Upper Room. This is what our home looked like when we moved into it 30 years ago in Pinelands. But Lenora, coming from Europe, knew there's a lot of space in the attic. You don't waste that. So we had attic conversions there too. This is a picture from Spain, 2018. The winning team passing under the paddle guard. You might have noticed when you arrived tonight, the Austrian flag outside, flying at half mast. We cannot have the Christian flag flying at half mast, not since 30 AD. But we are dual citizens, Kingdom of Heaven and of the nations that we belong to on earth. In 2006, my first edition of the Greatest Century of Reformation book was dedicated to Lenora in these words. This book is dedicated to my best friend, co-worker, missionary partner and wife, Lenora Dawn Hammond. In 2008, Lenora wrote Reforming Our Families. One of Lenora's last projects was typing up an unpublished manuscript of a book that her father, Reverend Bill Bathman, was working on, Reformation Revival in Romania, especially based on many interviews he had with Joseph Chan, who is pivotal in the Reformation Revival in Romania. By God's grace, we plan to have this ready for publication soon. Our Lord Jesus Christ declared, I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me will live, even though he dies. I am convinced that neither death nor life, nor angels nor demons, nor principalities nor the future, nor any powers, neither height nor depth, nor anything in all creation will be able to separate us from the love of God, which is in Christ Jesus our Lord. There is an empty tomb in Jerusalem. And so in sure and certain hope of the resurrection of the body.